Welcome back to Binge Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Harsh, and if you've ever found yourself pausing a movie just to study a proton pack, zooming into behind-the-scenes photos, you know, the ones that give you the tiny details, or spending way too much time deciding whether a piece of gear is close enough, then you're in the right place. Today I'm joined by Archer with Nerd Affiliated and the Real Nerdbusters. If you've ever spent time on, you know, the internet, and maybe in the Ghostbusters community specifically, chances are that you've seen his videos, live streams, convention coverage, or, you know, maybe even listened to his podcast or watched it. Yeah, you can do that too. What I appreciate about Archer is that he looks at this hobby from every angle. He's a builder, a collector, a content creator, and above all, a fan. We're talking screen accuracy, flight suits, weathering, proton packs, electronics, Ghostbusters night shift, and why building these props is about a lot more than just recreating what we saw on screen. It's about learning new skills, sharing ideas, and keeping this hobby moving forward. So grab your soldering iron, your weathering kit, or whatever project you're working on, because we've got a lot to cover. This is Binge Tested. Let's get into it. Hey, Archer, what's going on, my man? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Oh, dude, this is so cool. Now, you are with Nerd Affiliated, the Real Nerdbusters. Tell me a little bit about that. How did that get started? How did that get formed? What's going on there?
Yeah, I was trying to be funny with it and think of the Avengers line where it's like it started with a blank, and I can't remember what the thing was. But in this case, it kind of started with a proton pack. And I've been doing Nerd Affiliated for a long time at the Hey Archer podcast. And some friends of mine from back home in New York, that's where I'm from. I live in Boston now, but some friends of mine started going to Comic-Con, and I've been going to Comic-Con for a long time. And one day we were like, oh, it'd be cool if we did like a group cosplay. And a couple of years prior to that, at Spirit Halloween in one of their, you know, year-end sales.
Yeah.
They had a open box returned 80% Spirit Halloween pack. And it was on super discount for that reason. It was like, I think I paid like $20 for it or something.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, yeah, I'll buy it for a friend of mine who's into Ghostbusters. And, you know, long story short there, like he's not really into cosplay and was like, I have nowhere to put it. So I asked the group, I was like, hey, I have this proton pack here. You guys want to do a Ghostbusters thing together for Comic-Con? And we like fully embraced all of it and decided to make a subgroup just for that.
That's awesome. So you guys committed to it and there you go. The rest is history, right?
Yeah, it just started rolling. So it was like, you know, we have Nerd Affiliated, the podcast network, you could say. And we were having so much fun with the build and putting the costume together. And then we came up with our own patches and came up with the name, the Nerdbusters. And that's where we were like, it was like a monster just kind of like formed and took over.
I love that. Now, of course, you know, Nerd Affiliated, the big umbrella of it, or the umbrella of it all. And then you got Ghostbusters, which is kind of coming under that. It's played a huge part in your channel over the past few years. What is it about the franchise that pulled you in deeper than just being another fandom?
It was that experience going to that New York Comic Con. I want to say that was like 2022. I think it was the year before I got married, or it might have been the year I got married, so 23. But you know, one of the things I've always done with when it comes to comic book conventions and doing cosplay is I never want to cosplay a character that I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's only happened, I think, one other time where my wife wanted us to do Steven Universe. So I watched some episodes just so I had an idea of what it was.
Yeah.
I hate going in blind. So when the Ghostbusters idea came up, I just kind of went head first into the movies, because at that point I was not a Ghostbuster fan. So I went in. Prior to that, I had seen it once, wasn't crazy about it. And then I had actually edited Anthony, who does content for us, Rambling Nerd, I edited his review of Afterlife. So those are like my only like two real exposures to Ghostbusters. So once we decided to do this cosplay, I was like, all right, I'm gonna go back in. I'm gonna look up videos on how people do the cosplay, how they've done it, what they've done. And I think I fell in love more with the fandom before I fell in love with the movies.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, when you say the fandom, and is that all-encompassing with the gear and seeing what people are coming up with as far as that goes? You know, me, myself, I'm a huge, you know, nerd when it comes to technology and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. I love seeing what they did in the movie with that technology and yep. creating that kind of, you know, atmosphere around it, that fun, exciting, new kind of off the shelf. What do we got lying around? Let's put this together right. and make it work. Right. I loved that mentality of Ghostbusters. I mean, that's what they are, right? They start out as three misfits, you know, in the whole thing. They put everything together and then they bring Winston on. Then you got four, you got this group of guys who are trying to change the way that, you know, ghosts are perceived, and they catch them, you know, just all that.
Yeah.
I love doing that. Is that what brought you in when you say the fandom?
Exactly. Yeah. And even kind of like jumping around a little bit, like I feel like as a newer fan watching everything, I feel like that kind of spirit of it, I guess, pun intended, was lost in the last outing, yeah. movie wise. And I think they're trying to go back to that with the new cartoon coming up.
Yeah.
But it was very much that. It was the, you know, the vibe I was getting before I was fully in was, all right, the movies have this gear. They have these proton packs. They have all this other stuff. I watched 2016, a very divisive one, ended up actually liking that movie, and I liked how raw those packs looked.
Yeah.
And as I did more research into the community and what people do with their builds, I realized that unlike other, like, fandoms when it comes to cosplay, this one was all about being unique. Like, nobody's really walking around with a name tag that says any of the main characters.
Yeah.
Usually it's themselves, and the pack represents themselves. And that was the aspect where I was like, oh, like, it was almost like this this fear of, like, not living up to, like, what people expect to see in a cosplay. Like, that almost, like, came down. Like, those walls came down.
Right.
And just seeing the passion people put into how they customize their packs and stuff, I was just like, yeah, this is for me.
You know, there are so many of people within the fandom that they are so dead set on accuracy.
Yes.
And movie accuracy. And if mm-hmm. this is not right, then I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are a lot of people in the fandom as well. I'd say probably a little bit more. You know, you got that small subset of folks who are like that. And they're typically the loudest, right? But
right.
then you've got, you know, the other group who are just in it to have fun, and they just want to, yeah. you know, do their thing. And yeah, maybe they still, they don't want to walk around with a Venkman tag on. You know, they want to have their right. own. They want to make it their own. And I've always said that there's nothing wrong with that. You can do exactly that, you know,
right.
bring your own suit, make it for you. And you don't have to spend all this ungodly amount of money on a cosplay. But you mm-hmm. can, and you can get in the weeds pretty deep. What are some of the things that you look at when it comes to the cosplay portion of it all to make it your own? What are some of the things that stand out off the top of your head?
Usually it's the, what are the mods that they're doing to the pack? Like I look at everybody's pack, whether it's the Spirit, you know, 80 or 100, or if it's, you know, any of the, like the Halloween costumes one now, like, I look at the packs, and then usually at that point I view them all the same, and I'm then looking for what are you doing to make it look different than the next person.
Yeah.
So whether it's additional LED lights, whether it's slime, like the people who like to add a lot of melted marshmallow on there, like all those little details are what usually I gravitate towards when I'm looking at somebody's like just full cosplay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the people who, like, you know, they have all the pins, they have different patches, like, all that's great. And if that's the only part of their cosplay, like, if they don't have a pack, then I'm more focused on the flight suit or whatever version they're rocking. But usually when it comes to the pack itself and the gear, I'm like, all right, how did you make it your own versus going for screen accuracy?
Yeah. Where would you say that you fall in that whole category? Would you say that you're more the screen accurate guy, or do you want to, you know, maybe, you know, just be your own and you don't feel the need to go all out like that?
No, it's a great question, because I feel like I was on a quest to get as close to Screen Accurate as I could. But the entire time I was saying out loud, and I truly believed it, I was like, I'm not going to get Screen Accurate. Yeah. Like in every build video I've done since the first one, even to the most recent when it comes to the RGB pack, like I'm going to get as close to accurate as I can, because I just want to be recognizable. And I also want to like kind of challenge myself a little bit, but by no means am I trying to go up to somebody and then look at the pack and be like, wow, that is the same one because of this piece or that piece. I just want them to look and be like, wow, that's a cool Ghostbuster laser gun thing.
Yeah, I like that. The laser gun. That's great. And that's the thing, is that people oftentimes who are fans, or maybe they're coming up, especially at conventions, right? Because you're going to get, you know, folks from all over the spectrum who are just going to fall in love with what you got on, because it is cool. You got a bunch of blinky lights. Oftentimes, at least with my pack, it smoked. Well, it did smoke until a couple of days ago when I burned it out.
Oh, no.
I know. I gotta get on and fix that. But yeah, it's so much fun to see that kind of stuff and to show it off, which is why my pack stopped working on the smoke. But you know, there's so many cool things about it, and I think that is really what's fun in the whole deal with your specific cosplay. Mm-hmm. With what you have on, let's start from the top down. So the first thing that people tend to gravitate towards looking from the top down on your flight suit is, well, obviously the flight suit. Where did you get that? What are you using? What are you rocking?
Yeah, so the first two that I had are the was it Rothko that makes the Amazon, like you can just get on Amazon, like there's different color ones.
Yeah, I've seen Rothko and Proper both on there.
Yeah. I think they're both Rothko.
Oh, okay.
And then the last one I got an all black, just because I wanted to like mix it up, and it was also short sleeve.
Yeah.
That brand, I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's a very thin flight suit. And I've only worn it outside once. I wore it to this convention called TerrorCon up here. And I don't know, I just didn't feel the same. Like in a almost in a negative way. Like it functioned, but I didn't feel the same, almost like in universe feel with that versus like the heavier material Rothko ones.
Yeah,
every save.
Gotcha. Yeah, and you know, that's the thing, is that you, like you said, you know, you don't have to go all out, but you know, they're fun, you know, for sure, to get in and try something different. Like, you know, the short sleeves, like you mentioned, there's, you're not going to see that in a movie, at least right now anyway. You go back and you look, you're not going to see any of them rocking a flight suit with short sleeves. That's what's all about, making it for you. And let me tell you, especially in the summer for those summer cons,
oh, yeah,
a short sleeve flight suit is amazing to have on hand. I can only imagine. Mm-hmm. So that's super cool. And that's one thing too I love, you know, with Frozen Empire. I think there's great things about all the movies. They came out with a lot of new stuff in Frozen Empire that we could really grasp on. You had the one arm the thrower. That you had. You've got the red parkas, and then they brought in a brand new patch with the engineering patch, and then that suit, that black suit, which is one of my favorites. I have one as well. I'm in love with it. I think that is one of my favorites. Which one would you say that you kind of lean towards the most?
Oh, actually, too, I just looked it up, and it was a True Spec. Those are the ones I was buying.
Oh, the True Spec. Yeah,
the True Specs. Yeah, yeah. You know, I always gravitate towards the khaki as far as like what I want to throw on.
Yeah.
But there's something about the navy blue, you know, it's not completely accurate, but the navy blue like colored part two look.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's the dark gray, obviously, but I just feel like the fandom kind of made their own, what was that Sinbad movie that didn't exist? Shazam.
Shazam. Yeah.
They made their own Shazam thing where they're like, no, but it's kind of blue. Like, it's blue, you know. So I like the navy blue suit just because you don't see that very often.
Yeah.
And it was my first one, but nowadays, like, if you were like, hey, I need you to go to a convention like tomorrow, throw something on, it would probably be the khaki.
Okay. Yeah, you got to go old school with it. You know, the OG. That's what I love. I mean, that's my go-to as well. And there are a lot of suit options out there now, just like you said, from TruSpec and Nomex to Magnoli, which is what I have. I have a Magnoli suit, which is great because it's custom made. But if you do mess up on your measurements like I did, you know, that is something to...
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah. But, you know, look, that aside, I made sure to make a mistake in the best direction, which you can always take some off. You can't put some on.
Yes.
And so that's what because I wanted to make sure, you know, it helps out that they were baggy to begin with. And obviously they do kind of need to be because they're going over everything you got on. But I did kind of make mine probably a little too baggy, but I wanted to be safe, especially like when you get down to like the crotch area all the way up to your shoulders. Oh, yeah. That is one of, for me, I'm 6'3". That is one of the toughest things to get right is being a 6'3 and a big dude. I'm like a linebacker, bro. I mean, you know, to try to find a suit that fits that stature is difficult in and of itself. So for me, something custom made is definitely something I needed to lean towards. Now, in your opinion, what makes the biggest difference in getting the overall look right?
Ooh, like if somebody was like starting?
Yeah, say starting out, or maybe, you know, like you said, maybe they don't have the pack on. Maybe it's the second day at the convention they realize, I'm not going to carry that heavy thing around. And they're just, you know, maybe rocking the one-arm thrower and the suit. First thing you go through is the suit. What is it that makes it, you know, complete the look for them?
I got to say, I have this weird fixation with the no-ghost patch.
Was about to say the same thing, yep.
Yeah, because I, you know... Everything else, you know, is fully customizable. But whenever I'm looking at a suit and I kind of like even try to identify like how hardcore of a fan is this person.
Yeah.
I immediately go to the no ghost and I'm like, are they going for like the 84 like GB fans? It's like close to what it looked like there with the deformed side where it's not completely like circular.
Right. Yeah.
Or is it one that has like a super thick white outline or black outline like the Spirit Halloween one that comes with the pack, you know, like I'm usually gravitating towards that first to be like, all right, what kind of fan are you here as far as like how
where are they at in the fan spectrum, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and see, for me, I'm kind of the same way. I have to, without it looking creepy, I need to just feel the patch. I need to kind of see where that patch is, because for me I love the fact that, you know, there are people out there like Todd Cook Designs and gbpatches.com who have really gone out and they've sought out the fabric that was used in the original movies.
Yeah.
Or at least close to it. And it's fantastic to see that. I, for me, have a Todd Cook Designs patch. I think it's, again, one of my favorites. I love it. It's just like what you said. It's kind of that deformed outline. It's not, you know, perfect, like it's not the idealized patch, I think is what they call it,
right?
Or like maybe what you'd see on the side of the Ecto-1. It's not, you know, that's the idealized. It's not that,
right?
I wanted mine, especially on the Magnoli suit, I wanted it to, you know, be pretty close to that, because I figured if I'm going all out with this suit, I need to go ahead and put the right patch on, you know, so or at least the right patch in that universe.
Exactly.
So, you know, yeah, no, I definitely see it there. You know, once you've got your suit, though, weathering can become the next challenge. What is your philosophy on weathering? Is it kind of like the less is more, or do people tend to be too cautious with it? Like, where do you see that at?
Oh, that's a good one. I think you got to at least throw it into the dryer or the wash, you know, like bare minimum, just to get like the starchiness off. Of it being a fresh out the bag flight suit. And, you know, it's the same thing like with bed sheets or, you know, just dress shirts or something, you know, like you just gotta put it through once before you just throw it on. So, you know, as people weather it, what I kind of do enjoy is trying to figure out like, is that actually, you haven't washed it in so long, or did you spray paint that on? Like I do enjoy kind of that game of it, but I feel like if you're, again, kind of going back to the idea of like, if you're starting off, like you got to at least throw it into the dryer for one cycle.
Yeah.
Just get it going from there, you know, use a Brillo pad or various things to scuff up like the knees and the elbows. But
Take off your hose connector before you put it in the wash, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Found that out the hard way once. Yeah.
Exactly.
Especially if you got a rubber one. Yeah, definitely watch out for that.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. That actually made me not sew mine on. Because I was like, I was going to go that route. And then I was like, ooh, but if I have to wash it, that's going to be a problem.
See, and I think what I'm going to end up doing is, so I had sewn mine on. And because, again, authenticity, right? I wanted wanted it to, you know, look like that. However, with what people are out there doing with the magnets,
yes,
I was thinking, now that I've got it sewn on, maybe I need to cut that off. Maybe I need to sew around the loops to give it that appearance that it's sewn on, of the connector, and then slap a magnet onto the back. You know, put some epoxy or some E6000 on there to keep the magnet on there, and then get another one on that backside. Inside and do it like that. I was kind of thinking maybe that's the route I need to go, because I do, and that's the other thing too. You said washing it. It just hit me. I got this suit just about 2 months ago. I haven't even washed it yet. Mm-hmm. So I should probably do that before I start, you know, cutting things up, you know, because
exactly.
Then it might fit perfectly.
That's true.
Point.
That is a good point. I will say with the magnet though, like I, you know, with every convention I go to, like number one is always trying to get content.
Yeah.
So I just always have a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I've knocked off my magnet hose thing like 5 million times.
Oh,
like,
wow.
To the point where I don't take it anymore. Like I'll use it like if I'm at the house doing something for content and I'm not carrying stuff.
Yeah.
But if I'm going somewhere, like I don't take it anymore.
Gotcha. Yeah. See, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, because I can imagine that getting hooked on everything. Do you have the magnet inside of the end of the hose and to the connector as well?
So it's only the only place where I have the magnet is the hose, the I guess you could say the female end of the connector,
right?
And then on the inside of the leg, then I'll have like a heavy duty magnet there, and then the back end of the hose that goes like around your waist, that I just have a Ziploc going through the end of that, and then
okay.
It goes around the belt.
Gotcha. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that there's so many different ways that you can attach those that I found online. Somebody was able to come up with a, basically, kind of like they did in the movie, where they had it kind of tucked under the belt, but it wasn't, it's not visible to a point, so it's, you know, with these gun belts that we have, this webbing belt, it's got the three holes in it, right?
Right.
The connector kind of goes on like the top hole. You screw it in, and then it has the little piece down, you know, hanging down that you just kind of put the hose into. So it's kind of hidden behind your belt. So it's pretty cool. I'm describing it horribly, I know, but it's
no, but I have an idea what you're saying.
Yeah, no, it's super neat because it keeps it hidden, and it does. It kind of gives it that feel. You know, that's the other thing too. Once I got into this hobby, I was like, I need a 3D printer to print all this stuff, because there's so many cool things that you can find online and do. And that's what I ended up doing. That's where my pack came from. I 3D printed that. And
oh, no way.
And the rest is history. My first one that I did was the Spirit Halloween pack.
Okay.
The full size. That was my big foray into, you know, being a buster. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, I need to graduate. And so I graduated to the 3D printer, got a Bamboo Lab A1, and then I just started printing and printing and printing. Then I realized why it's such a pain in the ass, because then you have to sand, and then you have to paint, and then you have to prime, and then, you know, it's a lot goes into it, but when I look at it on the wall, I'm proud of it, because,
that's what matters.
It is, and that's the thing. Looking down on that suit, so we got to the patch, we talked about those. When you get down to the utility belt, if someone is putting together a belt today, what are the biggest mistakes that you see with the layout or placement of gear?
Ooh, I would say the biggest mistake I see is when people are almost like trying to go for accuracy with like, I got to have everything on.
Yeah.
When you're going to something like a convention, you know, it's one thing if you're, you know, walking around your neighborhood, or you're, you know, doing maybe even like a parade. But when you're in a group setting, like a convention, and there's just people everywhere, or even Ghostbusters Day. Like, if you want to have on like your PKE meter, fine. You know, Bell Gizmo, fine. But I feel like one of the biggest mistakes I see is people want to load up everything they have.
Yeah.
And of course, if you are doing that, you want the best belts around. Toolsandtalentprops.com. Use code HeyArcher.
I have two of them. I have two of them. I've got the black one for my parka, and then I got the because look, like I said, I'm a big dude. And they have the belts that will help you out if you're a bigger dude like myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, they do. I agree 100%. Definitely got some of the greatest belts out there.
And it's solid. So if you do want to load up, you could.
Yeah.
You can put everything on there. There's a video online of somebody doing that. But I feel like when it comes to just like that, the placement of stuff, like, you got to have some sort of way to fasten your wand, because you have to assume you're not going to have it on the pack at all times. Like, at some point, somebody's going to want a picture. So you're going to have to take that off and be able to put it onto one of the belt loop things. So figure out a way to have that. And then the other side, PKE, if you want to do a trap, fine. But a lot of times I see people with so much stuff, and you could see it in their faces when it's just like really starting to weigh on them.
Yeah, it gets a little overbearing for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I was thinking today as I was looking over at my belt, I got it hanging up on a diamond back plate with my pack. And I was like, okay, I might need to scale down a lot of this stuff on there. Because there's, you know, if I'm going for accuracy, right? You know, I could easily say, well, depending on if I'm doing GB1, for example, they're not going to have the lifeguard 2 on there. I could probably take that off.
Right.
I don't know. I see a lot of people say, you know, you really need that on there? But I felt, why not? And I kind of loaded it up on there, but the Maglite flashlight holder. I got a big 6-cell Maglite in there. and you know how heavy those can be.
Yep.
Those are a weapon in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
And then I've got my PKE meter holster, and then I've got my belt gizmo, and then I've got the trap, and then I've got E-guns, that I got the walkie, which is a legit one, and those things are heavy.
Yep.
And then I've also got E-guns, it's the realistic or the Radio Shack sound meter that was used, I think, only in GB2. So there's a couple of things on there I could take off. The trap, I don't carry on the belt, I just carry the holster. But I kind of feel like I need to pare down some of that, especially coming up at the convention. Like, if I'm trying to go for that, you know, maybe that GB1 look, I could probably pare down on that and it would look pretty decent. Is that about what you've got going on?
I mean, at this point, I have, you know, the PKE on there sometimes, and that's about it. My first Ghostbusters Day, I took down everything, and I was like, all right, while I'm there, I'm going to make an on-the-fly decision as to how much I do want to load out.
Yeah.
And when it came down to carrying the gear to the firehouse, that's where I was like, I can't do all this and have my camera gear and the mics and all that stuff. So the last time I probably had on PKE and trap out in public was the first New York Comic Con where we all dressed up.
Oh, okay.
And at that point we had a friend who was like recording for us, so I didn't have to worry about holding the camera the whole time and all that.
Right.
But after that point, it was just, if I'm going to be suited, I'm going to be wearing just a pack and that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, sometimes you know, you're right. You do have to scale down depending on what it is.
Yeah.
You know, that you want to do and what you're, you know, looking to accomplish. I think
if
you have all that stuff on and you are going to a con, definitely think about how long you're going to be there.
Yep.
And, you know, because that can definitely be literally a pain on you, because it can, you know, all that stuff. And then you put your pack in on that too. We're just talking about the belt. We're not even taking into consideration the pack. I mean, that right there is a lot. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot going down on there. If you can, you know, if we're looking down on in the suit, right, we keep going down. We talked about the hose. We get to the boots. Yep. What boots are you rocking?
Ooh, I wish I looked up look that up before I got on this, because I have this random pair. I have what, maybe two random pairs of boots that were like clearance, either like Macy's or like JCPenney pickups, like back in the day. And what I like about the two sets I have a pair of brown ones, I have a pair of black ones. They have zippers on the inseam part. So like, you know, I can just tie it up however I want, and then I could zip up the side to actually like, you know, lock into place. So the ones I have are like really comfortable. I know a lot of people who go for accuracy, like when they get the screen use type boots, they're always like, you gotta get like good insoles, you gotta do all this stuff. These things, like they're so comfortable. If I find the name, I'll let you know, but they're regular like dress boots, like dress going out type of boots.
Okay.
And they do the job quite well.
And so they have like the zipper right there on the outside that you were talking about?
On the inside. So like your inseam. So you wouldn't see the zipper unless like I turn my heel like inward per se.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Right there. Yeah. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ended up going with, and they have it, you know, this isn't screen accurate. And I think where the boots is where a lot of people kind of just like let it, you know, lax a little bit, because they're kind mm-hmm. of more focused on what they got on their back and their belt and stuff like that. I ended up going with Bates. Mm-hmm. They had them on Amazon, and they are paratrooper boots. I mean, they got the shiny toe, just like they did in the movie. Everything else is kind of that matte black going on. They got the zipper right there as well. What they don't have is, or what these do is, the color's off when it comes to the zipper, because I think in the movie it was supposed to be like this silver zipper, and these are black, and it has the flap that goes over the two buttons and the zipper at the top. So again, it's not about, you don't need to be perfect, right? To for people to recognize that you're a buster.
Exactly.
That's what, you know, I think people need to kind of, you know, just keep in mind, you know, you don't have to worry about that.
And there are people that like I've seen, you know, like my neighbor, for example, like last year, he didn't know I was like a big Ghostbuster head. So like he comes outside, he's in the, I think he bought his at like Party City, like the Party City suit, and you know, my wife or somebody was like, oh, like, do you see he's also a Ghostbuster? And I was like, oh, that's cool. And like I put on my stuff and went out there and like took a picture together, and you know, he's looking at my flight suit, I'm looking at his, and he's like, man, yours looks so professional. I'm like, no, but yours looks good too. Like,
yeah,
the quality of a lot of this stuff has gotten so good that like if you're even just dressed up anywhere adjacent to a Ghostbuster, people will be like, that's dope. Like people, the public doesn't examine your suit for accuracy and any of that stuff. They're just like, does it look close enough? Does it have a patch that looks close enough that I can tell what you're going for? That's what matters.
Yeah.
And an even better example of that, at Ghostbusters Day this year, we got a chance to talk to some people from the Central Massachusetts Ghostbusters, and they have, getting the model, but it's like a Ford, almost like box, I forget what called it. It was like a Ford box something. And it's like this weird truck where like the top comes off and the back of it looks like, the best way I can explain it is like a cooler looking minivan. Like it's very rectangular.
Oh, okay.
Again, if anybody wants to look it up, it's on our YouTube channel, but this thing does not look like an Ecto-1 at all. Like, not even close. But it's white. It's got the no ghost thing on the side. They have a bunch of things on the top of it that looks like tubes and containers to capture things.
Yeah.
And the dude was like, people have come up to me and been like, wow, is this the same exact one from the movie? And he's like, have you never seen the movie? Like, but again, as long as people assume what you're going for, and they could be like, oh, that's supposed to be blank, the details don't matter. It just got to be close.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I remember seeing that in the video on your YouTube channel. It was old, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was this old truck, and he he had the stretcher in it too, right? It pulled out. He had packs on it.
Yep.
That was the coolest thing that, you know, people can make anything out of this, a ghost-busting vehicle. I've always wanted to get, ever since, again, talking about Frozen Empire and what they were able to bring as far as new stuff and equipment and stuff into the universe, the transit van, you know, with the big engineering logo on it. Or actually, I think it had the regular logo. But, you know, I would love to get a black van and put the engineering logo on the side,
because
it's just not something you see often, or I don't think I've seen anybody do anything like that. But that's something pretty simple. You do that, put some, you know, low profile lights on there, and bam, you got a buster vehicle. I think a lot of that's super cool with what people are able to do.
It was a Chevy panel truck, is what it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it would definitely go check out the YouTube channel if you haven't, and see that, because it's one of the coolest things of what he was able to do. And were all of his packs were those all fiberglass, or what was the deal with those? Did you get into that?
If I remember correctly, so Anthony's the one that talked to him and kind of like walked through everything. I was taking pictures.
Yeah.
None of them were 3D printed, but I think only one of them was a Hasbro. I think the other ones were fiberglass, but different models as well.
Oh, okay.
Like, I remember him mentioning one of them was from a scan off of a screen used.
Oh, wow.
But it wasn't all of them. So it was definitely a mix. And again, like, people walking up to it, like, I couldn't tell. Like, I was standing there taking the pictures. Anthony was asking the questions. Like, I could not tell you which one was the Hasbro versus the fiberglass versus whatever, because they have put so much work, kind of going back to an earlier question, when it comes to weathering, you know, pack versus a flight suit. Weathering on a pack is all the difference.
Yeah.
Like that takes anything and makes it look like it's actually some sort of cast iron electrical device, you know, like it's night and day. And with those, they have put so much work into those packs that, like, I was like, I did not believe any of them were something you could just buy online. And sure enough, like I said, I think I'm pretty sure one of them was a Hasbro.
See, and we are so lucky to live in the time that we are to be a fan of Busters in general, just because if you're looking for a Proton pack, your first one, you've got great options out there, affordable options. We were talking about Spirit, right? They make a great full-size pack now that you can go and get the shell and mod it, which I've done, and you can make that thing look hard to tell that it's anything else or anything close to a Spirit pack, because you can make it look so real. And that's, you're right, the weathering can make all the difference in the world, especially on something like that.
Yeah.
And then you got fun.com with their Halloween pack and their version of it. Yeah, I mean, there's just so many cool things. And what I like about theirs, actually, is I think, if I'm remembering correctly, the bumper is not attached like the Spirit one is.
Correct.
So it looks even more authentic, I think, in terms of, you know, those little things and nuances. But, yeah.
And you get an Alice frame.
And you get an Alice frame. See, I totally forgot about that. That's something totally cool that people just, you know, if they're out there looking, you know, that's a great place to start. Now, we were just talking to Spirit Halloween. You've seen everything from Spirit accessories to completely fabricated equipment. Which pieces do you think are worth upgrading first on a pack? Which ones are perfectly fine to leave alone as well?
Ooh. You know, it depends on how far you want to go. And like, let's say somebody was like, I just want to clean it up a bit, like add a little bit of personality to it.
Yeah.
I would say drop, I don't know, the $50 to $75, get yourself some new stickers and just, you know, take off all the cheap stuff, throw on some stickers, maybe get the aluminum ones.
Yeah.
And even that with some rub and buff on the corners, you'll be in a pretty good spot there. But, you know, if you're willing to put in a little bit more, I would say if you have the 80% Spirit pack, you got to get rid of the wand. Like, you got to get a Hasbro at this point, just the Afterlife wand.
Yeah.
And, you know, it won't have any connectivity to the pack.
Yeah.
But like, that's what I did. That was one of the first things I changed out. And I was like, there were people who couldn't tell it was an 80% pack because the wands looked so good.
Yeah.
And then after that, you know, if you do want to go all in from there, that's when you start changing electronics and all that stuff. You know, Frank and Geek has always been my favorite person for electronics. But yeah, if I was starting talking to somebody who's just like, I want to put a little bit into it, I would say just stickers and weathering, you'll be fine. But from there, like, the first major thing I would do is get rid of that wand. I'd go wand, and then for sure you got to get a motherboard or an Alice frame on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking to the guys from GP Star, and they were saying the same thing. They were like, you know, if you're going to do an upgrade, one of the best things that you can do for your pack is, out of all the first things that you could do, Alice frame, motherboard.
Yeah.
Great. It's a great combo right there. You do that. You can, like, Redman Studio, I think, is a great place to start when you're looking for something like that, especially for, like, the spirit packs, which a lot of people get into as their first pack. He's got great options for those. And, I mean, that's a perfect place to start. And, get into it, because there's so much cool stuff that, you know, you can do, especially the little things like the clippards, or even the, get you some brass elbow fittings, stuff like that. Just those little small things that you're, and you don't have to do it all at once. I mean, if you did, that can make you go broke very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Which, I mean, and that convinced me to buy the Hasbro one, because I was like, you know, when I'm not done with my full size, like, you know, as they say, you're never done with your pack.
Yeah.
But my full size is at a stage now where I'm like, I'm good with this being the only pack I have. Like, the only one I take anywhere, because I put so much into it. And then when Hasbro announced theirs, and I'm like, wow, like, I've spent way more than that pack cost on my full size. Like, this thing is nothing, because I can buy it. I have a second one. I have a couple extra features I don't have on my full size. And again, I'll spend less money at the end of the day than if I, from scratch, did a whole second full size pack.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is. It's really not. It's not a bad deal at all. And are there still some in stock?
There should be. Actually, let me look right now.
Yeah, I feel like I was just looking on there either today or yesterday, and I think they still had stock. I don't even think it said low stock.
No.
You know, and now I'm just going to throw this out there.
Yeah.
They are having some issues right now with the wand. And if you don't have a wand, you might be spending a little penny on one if you really want to get one, because it's kind of difficult unless you go for the Spangler. But even the Spangler ones, people are buying those up, and the price on those is kind of going up just because they're able to mod those, since they can't find an authentic, you know, 84 style one.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I think Hasbro really missed the mark on this, you know, just expecting that everybody would have already had one of those.
I think that's the misconception as to why they don't have them. So one of the things I'm really nerdy about on, like, the channel, but it's mainly on the live show, is I'm all about numbers. Like, I do, not as often anymore, but I do box office, like, recaps, and I have a whole Excel sheet about the numbers, and I love that stuff.
And
I used to do sales for a long time, so I'm always looking at, like, the sales side. What's the perceived amount of money they're making? I do marketing now full time, so now I'm looking at that side of things. And there's a lot of, you know, with any company, as a fan, you're going to look at them and be like, you should have done blank. It's always coming from an angle of Monday morning quarterback every single time.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And you don't have a choice, right? Because you only know what you know. But when it comes to this in particular, there's, like, almost like layers to it. First stage, they come out with the Spangler wand back when Afterlife was out. And I ended up getting that one at a local toy store. They sold it to me for cost. After they sold it to me, they realized, oh shoot, we sold it for retail. We should have marked it up. But again, I bought it for my friend, the same friend who I was going to give that proton pack to. I bought that wand, I gifted it to him, and we unboxed it together at his house. And I was like, wow, this thing is, like, really good quality for the price. Like, I feel like this is underpriced. And when the proton pack came out, And I got to see it for the first time at Comic-Con when the other guys were wearing theirs, because I hadn't seen the HasLab at that point. I was like, this thing's, it feels underpriced. Like, it doesn't feel like it's a toy. And I remember Hasbro coming out at that point and saying, like, we're never going to make another one. There's no money in this thing. And as you fast forward and we get into the time now of tariffs being a thing for a second time, because they were, well, a lot of people don't know, is back in like 2019, before COVID happened, the administration put on a tariff on China. And when that implemented, we saw an increase in like all of our Hasbro stuff. Like Marvel Legends went from like $19.99, all of a sudden there were $22 at one point. And people were just like, oh, this must be a COVID thing. That was actually because of tariffs that had at that point been implemented as COVID was happening. So already out the gate, it caused Hasbro more to bring in something than it did when the HasLab was announced, the true HasLab. So we fast forward to where we are now. Last year, they announced the 84 packs a thing. We all say, whoa, you said this was not going to be a thing anymore. They say, well, hang on. We're taking out some features. We're taking out some extras. And here's the price. It's actually going to cost you less than the last one. So at that point, I'm like, I don't know how they're making any money on this. Because if they barely made money on the last one and they're charging us less this time, like, they must have just been able to save money on R&D because they're not, or not R&D, they're saving money on sculpting because they're using the base model of the previous.
Yeah.
All of a sudden now, you got a second wave of tariffs that come out after this thing closes the pre-order. And they're just like, you know what? Like, now we're really taking a bath that we didn't expect. We want to do another run of these wands, but you know what? Like, we're already so far in the hole. We can't do this anymore. Like, we got to just pump the brakes on this thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we didn't get the wands. I think it's the amount of money it's costing them to import this stuff, plus how much they probably are not making on this 84 pack. They were like, doing another run of wands is just not the move.
Yeah. And it's sad that that's the case, because there are so many opportunities out there for people who want to get this. And I've seen a lot of people who thought that they were going to be able to get a wand.
Yeah.
Now they're returning it, the entire pack, because now this just takes up a whole different perspective in their mindset that, you know, hey, if I'm not going to half-ass it and just get a pack when I can't even really operate it. Yeah, exactly. You know, you can turn it on and off, you know, but.
And this was asked to them at Ghostbusters Day, the day before YHS party. I was shocked that Hasbro was there. I didn't think they were going to show up this year. So I'm like, you have nothing to promote.
Yeah.
But sure enough, they were there. And it's because they're just good people. Like, they didn't have to be there 2 years ago, because at that point, the Ecto HasLab wasn't announced yet. That's when they teased it.
Yeah.
The pre-orders were closed on the two in the box HasLab. So I'm like, you didn't have to be here. Showed up anyway. He brought stuff for us to see. Last year, they showed up. They set up a tent, unveiled the 84. I'm like, this year, you don't have anything. Like, you don't have to be here. Hasbro itself, as a company, they've been doing a bunch of layoffs. They've cut down on budget. I'm like, Hasbro won't be here. Sure enough, I pull up to the event, the YHS event. They're there. Like, Emily's there. I think Rob's the other guy. Zach, who does the electronics, was not there. But the other two were there. And somebody in the audience during the show had asked that about the wands, and they looked over at Emily and she was like, nope, like, not happening. Wow. And I was like, that wasn't even like some sort of like joke, like, oh, we'll see, like, none of that. It was just straight up, nah, it's not gonna be a thing,
not a plan.
Nope.
Man, and that's, it's heartbreaking for people who were really hoping to have something complete. Maybe they missed out on the HasLab pack and they got this and they're like, oh, hell yeah, I'll get this and I'll be able to get the wand. And yeah, then it's just like a missed opportunity, really, you know. I mean, yeah, I see, you know, what you brought up, and that makes a ton of sense, and it's super depressing to hear, to be honest. But you know, what do you do? You know, you can't go out there and you know, other than maybe 3D printing your own,
right?
But then how are you going to make them talk? And that's kind of the whole point, is people want to be able to do that. I mean, yeah, there's ways around it, but who wants to get that involved?
Yeah. Well, it's also too like an addressable market thing, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, at what point do they say, all right, when we do an initial release of something, we usually get X amount. If it's a re-release, if it's another version, we only get this smaller amount. Is it worth the effort? And I think that's where Mondo's killing it right now, because so many people are enjoying the newness of those figures.
Yeah.
And I even apologized to the guy in person. I was like, listen, I'm like, I made all the hate videos on these figures. And now that I'm seeing it in person, holding it in my hand, I get it now. I still think it's high. I still think it's a bit high.
Yeah.
But I kind of get it. And I think with Hasbro, you know, unless they come out with something completely new, they're probably just like, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to do this run, to pay somebody to design, electronics, import, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is crazy. I mean, the price, like when I looked today and I saw the price of the Citizen Ghost mm-hmm. fit set, you know, it is, it's a big package. I mean, and it comes with the different heads. You can make them prior to being ghost. You can mm-hmm. make them ghostly, but $365.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I can justify that in my head. Yeah, it is a lot. It's a lot of money. I get it, but it is a lot of money. And, you know, people are into that. And, you know, it's like when it comes to doing a pack and stuff like that, like that's the kind of stuff that I can lean into and be like, okay, I'm just going to go and spend the extra money over here on this or that. But I don't know. I mean, I collect a lot of figures and a lot of Ghostbusting stuff, but I just don't know if I can justify that cost to put it in my collection.
I had this debate with myself when Mondo announced Peter, it was the same time that Hasbro announced the Ecto-1 HasLab.
Yeah.
What would be the final HasLab? And I was like, all right, the cost of, if I'm going based on Peter alone, the cost of getting all four, I almost said brothers, thinking like Ninja Turtles, the cost of getting all four busters is the same as an Ecto-1 with all four plus all these extras. Like, that didn't make sense to me. And it's still, saying it out loud now, does not make sense to me. Like you could get the Ecto-1 base model HasLab with Lewis, Library Ghost, Slimer for less than this four pack of figures that don't have electronics in it.
Yeah.
Like, it still doesn't truly make sense to me. But I'll tell you what, I'm staring at it now. I stare at it every day. On my desk, I have a Batman 1993 version, the animated series, Mondo figure. And it's an older model. This was a variant for Big Bad Toy Store. It's a black and white one. They had it on sale for $100. And I said, you know what? One day on a stream, I was like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to get this thing. Just so I can have something Mondo in my hands and see what the hype is all about.
Yeah.
And I be darned, man. Like, this figure does not have the best posability. The cape is not flexible at all. But if you told me that somebody pulled a Last Action Hero and pulled this thing out of the TV and put it on my desk, I would say, I believe you. Like, it's that, the detail is that good on this thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they nail, is they truly hit the nostalgia in, this actually looks like it came out the screen, not an interpretation of what's on the screen. It looks like somebody did put their hand through the TV and grabbed you that character.
That's insane. Like, that's,
I hate
one
to
thing.
Say it.
Well, I was going to say that, like, that's so impressive of what Mondo has been able to do. Like, the talent that their sculptors have.
Yes.
Is incredible.
Insane.
Because they do a great job of bringing those characters and the things that we love to life like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the paint on them looks immaculate. Like,
yes.
It is just, yeah, I mean, it does. It looks like you just took it out of the screen and put it on your desk.
The only other time I felt that way, and going back to Ninja Turtles, the figures that got me into toy collecting as an adult was the NECA TMNT 1990 Turtles. Like, I toys from that movie that looked like the movie did not exist up until that point.
Yeah.
And when I saw, there was a picture online. I have it on my computer somewhere. There was a picture online I saw, and I was like, oh, what, like, what frame of the movie is that? Like, I don't remember that. And I found out those are figures, and I was like, wait, what? And then I looked them up. And at that point, that was 2020. You couldn't find anything. They were out of circulation. And then they started popping up here and there at stores. So, you know, at that point, I started my toy hunting side of the channel. But that's the only other time I saw figures and I was like, oh, that feels like it came off the screen. Again, not an interpretation, like a legit, they just grabbed it. And I've been very anti-Mondo for a long time because they're just part of Funko. And I'm like, you're doing markups for the sake of markups. I understand there's licensing fees and all that stuff. But I'd be darned, man. Every time I go to the Mondo booth at a convention and I see those Batman animated series figures or recently the Beast from X-Men, the cartoon, I'm just like, wow.
Yeah, hey, that one looks really
that
good.
That is insane. Yeah. The Clayface figure, oh my God. Amazing.
Yeah, there's so many things that they've been able to accomplish when it comes to, like I said, the talent of their sculptors. I mean, it is they do a phenomenal job. And you know, yeah. and at that point, I guess I do understand begrudgingly the price point. But yeah. it can be you know, a little sticker shock to some folks, and that happened to me today. Like I said, when I saw the price of the Citizen Ghost set, I mean, yeah, $365. And then it was for Ghostbusters for the RGB with the ghost, it was like what, 202 or 204?
Yeah, so the guys on their own were 101 and they came with a small ghost. And then if you got a big bad two pack, that was a 202. So they did say at Ghostbusters Day, they're like, when you see the price on this, you're gonna be surprised in a good way. This pack legit is less than if you were buying all four on their own.
Are they the same size?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I think they also knew that, all right, we're going to ask these people to buy a four pack of something they have. And it's not the version that they're used to. Like, this isn't the color variant that when you think RGB, you think the four guys. So we've got to give them something here. And the extra ghosts are cool, but I think even just lowering the price per figure, it ends up being like 92 a figure or something like that, versus the 101. Again, it's not, you know, groundbreaking or anything, but the fact that you're getting two sets of head sculpts and hands, you can use these on your existing figures as well. Like, there's a lot of extra play they have there. But I think, all things considered, between all of the companies, the number one enemy here, at the risk of being blackballed from the industry, the number one enemy here is Ghost Corps, because they have a licensing fee on stuff that is causing prices to be what they are. Yeah. They can't say it, like, none of these people can say it, but they've alluded to it. And when you see the other six-inch figures, for example, that Mondo does, not even close in the cost. So I think that's a factor in how they got to that number, because of the licensing fee and because Hasbro still has the license as well. So there's some behind the scenes stuff going on there.
And I wonder how much of that's Sony that's pushing them to say, like, you know what? We get it. We know that you want to, you know, get your brand out there. And that's why we created Ghost Corps, was to do just that. But you're also going to have to charge a premium, and here's what it has to be.
Well, think about it, too. Like, the other day, I was, like, sitting here. Actually, I was driving back from Ghostbusters Day, and I'm like, you know, when you think of big name franchises, like, there's no Lucas world blank at, like, Disney that you go to, and you have the director there, you got a vehicle there. Like, there's no Ghost Corps equivalent with anything else.
Right.
And they release the least amount of media of everybody else. And I'm like, how does this make sense? From a business perspective, I'm like, how are they making back enough money to justify Eric sitting in that office Monday to Friday? Like, it didn't make sense to me, but I was like, you know what? if you're still getting a bunch of residual on these licensed deals with just that Ghost logo, the things like these figures, like, it helps. Every little bit helps, you know, in their case. But I don't know how that ever changes, if it ever does. If anything, I think it gets worse.
Yeah.
Because companies at the end of the day, not Ghost Corps specifically, but Sony, like you said, they all get greedy at some point. So I don't know where we go in the future, but that has a lot to do with that one-on-one price per figure.
Yeah, no, for sure. You're right. And it, you know, that price, it is, you know, a premium compared to especially their other products that they put out there. But, you know, is it something that we as fans are willing to pay? Yeah. Yeah, we're there's a lot of us out there who will. And for them, that keeps justifying the continuation of them doing what they're doing. And fortunately, it's putting out some good stuff. Unfortunately, it's at the price point that it is.
Well, I'll pose a question to you.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm a big believer in buy it once, buy it right. And those figures to me are like, you kind of buy them and you'll never have to buy another version.
Right.
Unless they end up going with a 1/6 scale release of those. Then I think you might even have people who get pissed off.
Yeah.
If they're able to make the price make sense and if the 1/6 scale cost is closer to the cost of the other Mondo figures, I think you'd have people who are like, oh man, like I bought the 6-inch version. I would have rather spend the extra 50 bones and get a 12-inch version, you know? Like,
yeah.
Would you go for that? Like, if you were able to get even one character off that show for, let's say, 180, would that be reasonable?
I don't know. I think, I mean, it just depends. Like, I want to see what all it's coming with, you know? I mean, if it's anything, if it's just what we would see is just the character.
Right.
No ghost attached to it, then probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is a little bit extra to it, it's not that much of a difference in my head to justify the cost.
Mm-hmm.
At least in you know, the grand scheme of things.
Like right now I'm trying to look at like a basic 12-inch figure, and probably the one of the things here with like the least amount of crazy extras is Thundercats Chitara.
Yeah.
Like she comes with some effects. $245 is her limited edition cost. I don't know what the base model would be. I assume the base would be like a 230, kind of like Tila from Masters Universe. She's 230. So like, I don't know, like a Spangler 12-inch scale, or sorry, 12-inch figure, 1/6 scale, that comes with just a proton pack and the blasts, maybe one extra head sculpt. I think at that point I'd buy that figure and just be like, I'm done. Like I don't need another version at that point.
Do you think that wouldn't catch you on to where you're kind of like, oh, shit, I got one. Now I need another. And then I got to have all four.
It gets you there, right? Like,
yeah.
That's the thing is you that FOMO part, you have to complete it.
Right.
You know, that does hit you. But I feel like with Ghostbusters, as far as the real Ghostbusters goes, because Egon was the figure that like escaped me as a kid, like, I'd be fine if I only had the blue flight suit RGB Spangler. I'd be good without the rest.
Yeah.
Even though Winston's kind of my favorite, that visual of Spangler is, like, my favorite from the cartoon.
Right. Yeah. No, I get that.
Yeah.
In kind of switching gears here, going to the cartoon, or at least what's coming up, Ghostbusters Night Shift.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really cool. I was watching the stream live.
Yep.
And to see them unveil that, you had Jason Reitman, you had Gil Kenan out there. That's cool in and of itself. Like, you know, you had mentioned earlier, I think you're not going to see many other franchises have their directors and producers out there, you know, showcasing something just because the fans love it. You know what I mean? That's where I think that they've really kind of stepped up in that sense is, you know, they at least participate. What do you think about Night Shift and what we saw coming out of, was it Italy, I think, for Annecy?
Yep.
You know, what do you think about that, the stills?
So I've had a lot of time to think about it since I had released two shorts about it. And I'm still in like a neutral stance. Like I give it a lot of grace because I'm a big fan of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, the cartoon. Yeah. And Star Wars, The Clone Wars, it's an animation style that's hard to get into. And I remember how I was very opposed to it. And it's one that I know a lot of casual people struggle to get used to. So there's a side of me that's like, because I want this franchise to succeed, I kind of wish they went a different animation style, something more traditional cartoon looking.
Now, when you say traditional, are you referring to like a 2D. What we had with R? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just a 2D. Even if they changed it from the original RGB, like I'd be fine with. I just, the one animation style I hate and I could never get into was the Extreme Ghostbusters style. Like that studio that did that, Men in Black, Godzilla, I hated that style. I just, as a kid, bothered me.
Yeah.
But on this one, you know, from a casual person's perspective of trying to get them excited about it or into it, I wish the animation was different. But that aside, I'm still in a neutral position because since I love Clone Wars so much, I'm giving this one the benefit of the doubt. Like Clone Wars fleshed out so much story-wise with different characters. To me, it improved the experience of the prequels. It bridges the prequels to the original trilogy. So if they can somehow, I'm not saying it's doable, but if they could somehow lightning strikes twice on this type of thing where they release an in-between cartoon series and it does a great job explaining some minor things that people have issues with the I guess sequel series, I'll consider that a win.
Yeah.
Like the fact that the original four are still involved brings up a lot of concern as to like, are they going to be really diligent about how they write this? Because I've always had an issue with them quitting. Like they quit going into the second one, they came back, but then they quit again going into Afterlife.
Yeah.
They quit again going in. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm tired of this trope. Are they going to do it again in this cartoon? I hope not. Or if they do, it better be for some like real mature adults. Something serious happened, and that's where they're just like, hey, we can't be doing this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it's going to be interesting because the way it played out in my mind before I heard that it was, you know, that they quit again, I thought that they were still busting Ghost all the way up until, I guess what, the
Afterlife?
Yeah, at least then. Maybe, you know, obviously some time before that. I'd say probably about, I don't know, the late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. in my head when it made sense for Egon to have left and things to just kind of calm down, you know, kind of go into what Ray said on the phone, you know, the economy was good, the Reagan years, you know, that mm-hmm. whole thing. And then, yeah, at some point between there, I would love for them to have some explanation and to tie it in because he's like, one day we showed up, all of our packs were gone, the Ecto right. was gone. So it was almost kind of like they were still in business until
yeah.
they showed up and all their stuff was gone. And so while they were still in business, all that, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, yeah. okay, well, where did all that kind of play a role? Where did that kind of jump in? And yeah. I hope that maybe we're just getting the Cliff's Notes version of this, and I'm sure we mm-hmm. are, and that there's still some gaps to be filled. And, you know, they did say that there was going to be a lot of that answered. So,
it's going to take a lot of work to do that because, yeah. I mean, the to say that the guy went so crazy that he went to that extreme of just taking all the stuff that Winston's now a bajillionaire, like, you've really got to make it make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I think is, I am so torn on whether or not let me say this first. I want them to keep Ernie Hudson in there. I think he plays a pivotal role, and they put him in that role, frankly, yep. because of what he did in Afterlife. You see at the very end of the credits, him bringing the Ecto-1 back to the firehouse, and he's got his briefcase in his hand, and then you see Janine talking to him at his office, and all these workers around him up what appears to be in a high-rise. I mean, he's definitely made a name for himself. Obviously, Zedmore Industries, that's a big thing. I really want him to be a role, and I'm kind of torn on whether or not I would be okay with them not bringing him into the fold. And I don't know, like, if they replaced him with somebody else is what I'm kind of getting at.
Right.
I love Ernie Hudson. I love Winston as a character. He's my favorite Buster, and I would be so upset if they didn't, you know, kind of bring him in, and we saw more of that. Because that you're right. That's part of the whole fandom that I want. You know, I need some more stuff answered on that. I want to see, you know, kind of like the backstory.
I mean, at this point, though, I'm also like, why aren't we just leaving New York? Like, I think one of the divisive things about 2016, and that's me kind of approaching it, I'm still going to consider myself as an outsider, because when I saw 2016 at that point, I was a new fan to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I understand what people have issue with outside of whether you think it's funny or not. I feel like what the fandom doesn't need is another attempt at straight up like replacing the original four in their own home turf. Like, if you're going to do a story of the act of ghostbusting continuing tied to the originals and you don't want to tamper too much, like, why aren't we just leaving the city? Like, why aren't we doing, you know, they trained a group in Chicago and now they're doing their adventures there, or Detroit or LA. You know, like, why not take that risk of just let's not attempt to do a rewrite of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, but I feel like the writing with Afterlife, it created a lot of unnecessary issue. You know, like, the world gave up on them. The world stopped believing in them. Like, they gave up being like, I was like, you just pull the Force Awakens and you rehash an old story and with a new coat of paint.
Yeah.
I enjoy watching the movie. But from a story perspective, as a movie fan, there's so many issues with it. And Frozen Empire, to me, didn't help those issues. So now I'm like, you know what? If you're doing a new series, I thought the series was taking place after Frozen Empire. So I was like, oh, they're going to do a whole whatever. But now knowing it's in-universe to when they would have been active, it has potential to cause a lot of issue. So I'm like, just leave New York City with these characters. Don't try to you know, Peter retires. Now there's a new Peter type character in New York City. Like, I don't think people are going to like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is going to be interesting, because that's what we did catch was, you know, it is set in 1994, which mm-hmm. is right between Ghostbusters 2 and Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was kind of frustrating is how they glazed over Ghostbusters 2 and Afterlife, because you have the Ecto-1 that looked just like the Ecto-1 that we know from 1984. You know, kind of like what happened to the 1A. There's just a lot of things that I think are a little interesting. You know, there's stuff that'll probably never be explained. Like, why do some of the packs have the GB1 ribbon and some of them have the GB2 ribbon? You know, mm-hmm. like that stuff that I want to know. But you know, that's probably so minute that only us, you know, nerds in the fandom would really catch on to that. But yeah, I think
those are the ones that are keeping this going.
You're right. Yeah. And they are, when I say they are, we are ones that definitely doing that for sure. And that's the other thing too, that I think we as that crowd need to keep in mind, is that while we will be the ones who are, you know, championing, you know, them bringing a new series, animated series to fruition for us, we also need to know and understand that they're dialing it in for a younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same generation that is watching, you know, the Into the Spider-Verse, right?
Yeah.
That animation style. And, you know, Clone Wars, for example, and that kind of stuff. I think that those are the kids and young adults who are, you know, really into that. And I think that they're going to be the ones to kind of help propel this forward to a degree. And so I'm really hoping that it does transcend all those thoughts that we're kind of having about, you know, how valid is this show going to be for us. They're not doing it to justify it for us. They're doing it to bring new people in, which is kind of the whole reason, you know, for Frozen Empire being the way that it was. And having that mentality behind it. I mean, they were really trying to aim towards that younger generation, and they try to do that while keeping us happy by bringing in the old school guys.
Right.
And I appreciate that. I do. I appreciate Frozen Empire for what it was. I love the 2016 movie. People can, you know, knock me if they want, but I loved it because I understood what it was supposed to be and what it wasn't supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be anything that took the place of anything that we had. It was supposed to be, you know, this whole, literally a reboot, just something completely different in universe, well, outside of universe, but to kind of keep a nod at some of the things that we all knew and loved from the original. So I think a lot of that was super fun.
And I'm happy to hear that because I also really like that movie.
Yeah, for sure.
I really enjoy it. My wife and I enjoy it. I think an issue I would have with it is that they brought in the old guys. You know, like I think, so I also viewed it as, all right, we're doing a reboot, you know, trying to create something for a new fan base. But by bringing them in, I felt like it was a very blatant, you know, we're killing off Han Solo type of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they did kill off character, but they even, they went as far as even changing names. And I'm like, so you didn't have to do that. Like, I'm like that. I could see where people would get offended by it. Like, it's almost like, you know, when they say, like, you know, choose your battles with your wife or your partner or whoever.
Right.
Like, I feel like in that movie, they purposely chose the battles. They didn't have to.
Yeah.
And I could see where people are like, why they would leave that movie being like, you know what, F you too.
Yeah.
Even though I disagree.
Yeah, no, for sure. And now one of the rumors I had heard was in order for them to even get the 2016 movie going, because I think the original guys, I think they essentially owned the rights or had a big portion of the rights to themselves to the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think the only holdout was Bill Murray. And so from what I understand, in order for Bill Murray to, you know, give the okay and to sign, you know, the contract so he could do his part, part of the agreement was that he had to be in three Ghostbusters films.
Mm.
Well, if that's the case, then 2016 was one, Afterlife was two, Frozen Empire was three. Mm-hmm. So whether or not we get another one that has, I think we'll definitely get another movie. I don't believe it'll have him in it. I'm not entirely sure it'll have the other guys in it. Probably Winston, again, because of the big role that he plays.
And he wants to be involved.
And he does. He definitely does. And that's what I love about him is, you know, one of my favorite lines that is said all throughout that movie, and it's so cliche because it's just expected with Ghostbusters at this point, but is at the very end of Frozen Empire when he's out there in the crowd and Peck comes up and he's like, you know, we are the ones to answer this call because we are the Ghostbusters. When he says that, I always get goosebumps. But that's also what he says in person. When you meet the guy, if you've never had a chance to meet Ernie Hudson, he is exactly like what you would think he is, a big fan of the franchise. He loves his fans. And yeah, he's just a cool, down-to-earth guy. But that's who he is. He's a Ghostbuster at heart. And he will be the first to tell you that. Yep. And I always thought that that was great. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting. But that's my thought process on the rumors that I had read online and heard about his about Bill Murray's the whole process to getting in that. So, you know, whether or not he wanted to be a Buster in 2016, you know, who knows if that played a role in the direction that the whole franchise took and or at least that movie took. Doubtful, but you know, it's interesting to think about anyway.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff going on out there in the world of Ghost Core and what they're able to come up with right now. I know that we still got a animated movie on the way, which is supposed to be interesting and fun. I'm kind of curious to see if that's supposed to tie into the Night Shift that we're seeing or if that's going to be completely different. I haven't heard anything, but
I think we just need a Dave Filoni. Like I don't think we have that yet. Like we need that super fan that they just gave a shot and the person just gets it. And I mean, I don't have any ill will towards anybody there now, but I don't think we have that.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it seems like, all right, we need to do these X, Y, and Z things. We think it's going to work on paper. Let's go for it versus somebody who like gets it. And even with the Dave Filoni, he's not perfect because there's things he's done wrong, and he's the first to say it. Like, if not for people like Sam Witwer helping him out, you know, being like, hey, that doesn't make sense. Oh, no, this is going to work story-wise. And then, you know, somebody like Sam, who voiced Darth Maul and some other characters, is like, no, you don't understand. Like, I know it makes sense on paper, but like in canon, it wouldn't fit. Like, unless you have that kind of person in the room with a Dave Filoni,
yeah,
it doesn't work. And I think, you know, studios being where they are these days, I'm afraid at times they're just throwing a logo on something and saying, it's fine, it'll do okay, instead of like somebody there who actually like cares, but also knows it and understands what they should be going.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. 100%. So after everything that we've discussed, after Afterlife, Frozen Empire, HasLab Pack, Spirits, Halloween Packs, Night Shift, does it feel like we're in another golden age of Ghostbusters, you think?
I'm going to say yes, because there's at least content coming in.
Yeah.
And you not only have content, but you have physical merchandise being released that people just never thought you would get. And I feel like when you're dealing with an old franchise with old players in the game, this is the best you can get at this point.
Yeah.
And for that reason, actually, I think I'm inclined to say yes.
Okay. I agree with that. I think that there is so much that we've been excited for that finally seems to be slowly but surely coming through, which is, you know, another animated series. I'll say slowly, actually, you think about it, it's kind of come pretty fast, at least in the past couple of years, because we had Frozen Empire, and then Afterlife before that, which kind of kicked off this new wave. I don't know. I'd say kick it off. I think 2016 probably kicked it off. And you know, maybe Sony and Ghost Corps realized that when they made so many people upset because of 2016, I hate to say it, that maybe they were like, you know, there's still a big fan base out there. Maybe we should try to rekindle this somehow. And you know, I think Afterlife was a great way to do it. But I mean, I'm excited to see what else is to come. I think there's a whole lot more out there to explore. And especially with the, like I said, the animated movie, Night Shift. Yeah, I'm excited. I think there's going to be a lot to talk about coming up soon. Speaking of talking about, my man, Archer, I appreciate you so much for coming on.
I appreciate you asking me.
Yeah, dude, we've been able to go over all kinds of stuff, builds, the cartoons, the series, the toys, everything. And there's still a whole lot more out there we should talk about again and get you back on and have another discussion with. And yeah, man, just go through it all. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, so if you go to nerdaffiliated.com, you'll find links to everything, whether it's the Ghostbuster stuff, the YouTube channel, the podcast, all of that. We are most active on Instagram, whether it's Nerd Affiliated or Real Nerdbusters. But we also have the Facebook groups as well for both of those. So if you're more general nerd, you know, Nerd Affiliated is a good spot for everything. But if you do want to get super Ghostbuster-y, the Real Nerdbusters, you can also go to realnerdbusters.com.
I love it. The realnerdbusters.com. That's where you go. Arch, my man, thank you so much for coming on Binge Tested. And yeah, we'll definitely get you on again.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
One of my favorite things about conversations like this is that they remind me of why the hobby has stayed alive for more than 40 years. The movies gave us the inspiration. Builders took that inspiration and kept pushing it further. Every new prop, every custom pack, every improved piece of electronics, every 3D print, every weathering technique, every new franchise, it all builds on what came before. You don't have to own the most expensive gear. You don't have to have the most screen accurate pack in the room. What matters is that you're creating something, learning something, and sharing that passion with the next builder who picks up a soldering iron or opens their first spool of filament. That's how this community grows. A huge thanks to Archer for coming on the show and sharing his perspective. Be sure to check out Nerd Affiliated and the Real Nerdbusters for all the great work that they're doing covering Ghostbusters and Maker community. And if today's episode gave you a new idea for your next build, then we've done exactly what Bench Tested was created to do.
Until next time, keep building, keep experimenting, and remember, every great prop started as someone's crazy idea sitting on a workbench. We'll see you on the next episode of Binge Tested, a Ghostbusters podcast.